Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
I want to introduce our guest, Mandisa Thompson. She is the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers. She currently serves on the board of American Atheists and the American Humanist Association. She actually facilitates one of our support groups in Merrill, Georgia, for recovering from religion. I think she's one of the longest serving facilitators for us with recovering from religion. In 2019, she was named the Freedom From Religion Foundation Freethought Heroine and was the recipient of the Secular Student Alliance Backbone Award. Mandisa, welcome. I think the first time you and I met was back in 2017 in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, okay, yes.
At the American Atheist. My wife and I were on a train trip around the country, a 30-day train trip. I had just retired, and there was our retirement trip that we were planning for. And we were at Folly's Beach for a week. We got off the train for about a week and spent it there during the eclipse. And that weekend, we were like, what can we find to do? And there's like, oh, the atheist convention is going on. And we have never been to one. And this was our very first atheist convention that we walked into. And the first person we saw was you.
Aww.
At your table. And it was super cold in that hotel. And my wife bought a red hoodie from you. And so you were very warm and welcoming to us.
Thank you. Yes, I was accused of bribing the hotel staff to make the room cold. That was funny. Yes. But
yeah. Made your sales go up.
Yes. Thank you all for having me. It's a pleasure to see some familiar faces, people I know and love on this call. And it's a pleasure to facilitate this week's meeting on behalf of Recovering from Religion and from Black Nonbelievers. For those of you who aren't familiar with me, like Todd said, my name is Mandisa Thomas, and I am the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers, which is headquartered here in the Atlanta, Georgia area. And the title of my talk is Utilizing Our Secular Support Groups. You know, our community is here. Use us. And so I'm sorry, Eric.
It's a question that we get so often, both in the helpline and the support groups, is I feel all alone. Is there a community near me that, or someone like-minded that I can connect with? This is such a important topic for the folks in RFR.
I would say Absolutely. It's probably one of the top reasons why people reach out to us is the loss of that community, looking to connect to others.
Absolutely. But what I'm going to speak on tonight is how secular folks can utilize and continue to maintain that community that we're facilitating. Because as much as we're here to help offer and provide it, it's going to take for folks to really, really participate and also support our efforts and also get involved. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I wanted to, I'm going to talk about my journey as well, is because it was very much a practical one. It was just about doing something that many people are scared to do, which is jump in. That can be a scary thing for a number of people. Absolutely. But, it's important for people to understand that, once you leave that community behind, or even if you're still involved, that there are multiple ways to connect with other like-minded individuals, as well as support the efforts. So with that, I'm going to start sharing my screen. And I'm going to get into some, I'm actually, once again, I really do, I love the relationships that I have built, especially with organizations like Recovering from Religion, because the community building and connecting with people and helping with overcoming that trauma, as well as helping to build up that emotional well-being or improve it, is really near and dear to my heart, as much as the other activism within the secular community. So this is titled Utilizing Secular Support Groups, and this is in conjunction with Recovering from Religion and Black Nonbelievers. So for those of you who aren't familiar with me, I'm going to get into a bit about me. So yes, like we said before, I'm the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers. I am a New York City native, so I'm not sure who on the chat line is either currently lives in that area or is from that area. But shout outs to you. If you are in or near the tri-state area, I hope you are staying safe, as it is one of the hardest hit during this COVID-19 pandemic. So, you know, my heart and my thoughts are definitely with you all, and I hope you are staying safe up there. But yes, I was born and raised in the New York City area, Jamaica, Queens, to be exact. I was actually pretty much raised secular. Now, I don't have that experience with having to overcome religion, but I'm going to get into that a bit later. But I was pretty much raised a non-believer. I'm 43 years old, will be 44 this year. And my parents were, they're boomers, but they were, you know, that was a very interesting time in the Black community where there was a focus on, you know, Black consciousness, Black pride. And so I come from that era. And one of, and as a result, my mother in particular, with my grandmother being an influence, decided that she didn't want my brothers and I raised in church. You know, my dad grew up in the church, but he hated it. And so he's one of those people who he's like, hey, you know, I don't care what you believe, you know, just leave me alone. But so I consider myself fortunate to have had parents who going to church and raising their children to be religious was not a priority. And so in starting Black Nonbelievers and also getting involved with the movement, before I transitioned to full-time activism now 2 years ago, I was working full-time as the event services manager at the Centers for Disease Control's headquarters campus in Atlanta. And this is also important. This was also important to my ability to engage and get active in the movement, because my expertise and my skill set is in event execution, event planning and event execution. So that was really helpful in getting the organization off the ground and connecting with folks. There's also a component to customer service and people engagement and hospitality, which has been very helpful. So like Todd said, I'm currently serving on the boards for American Atheists and the American Humanist Association. I previously served on the boards for Foundation Beyond Belief, the Secular Coalition for America, as well as the Reason Rally Coalition for the 2016 Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. I've been a Recovering from Religion group leader since 2013, recipient of the SSA, the Secular Student Alliance's Backbone Award, and the FFRS Free Thought Heroine. And I was also named the UU, the Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association's Person of the Year. That's a mouthful, sorry. But you're gonna hear more. But I wanted to give that background because yes, it's a lot. Sometimes I wonder like, wow, how the hell, you know, did all this happen? But again, it's a lot to take in for me. And if you can see at the bottom of the screen, there's a link to my Patreon. I really want to give a huge shout out to Gail for being one of my patrons and supporters. And there are other people who I think are on the line who are my personal patron supporters as well, because it's also how I help support myself during, for this activism. I'm going to also get into, I'm sorry, Eric.
So you're a full-time activist, like you kind of just like skipped over that, but you're a full-time activist. That is your job.
I made the decision to transition into full-time activism in 2018 because I was fortunate enough to, with all of the work that I was doing, there was a a increase in demand and for speaking and appearing and working with other organizations. And so the job I was working, while it was very good for my schedule, also did not provide any growth and development and any opportunities for advancement. So this was, you know, it was time for me to spread my wings and fly from there. Because ultimately it was hindering the growth, my personal growth and my professional growth, as well as the growth of the organization. And so it was better determined that my time was needed here. And I knew I was taking a big step. I knew it was a big leap for me, mm-hmm. because as I'm going to state this throughout the presentation, being just like a Recovering From Religion is a volunteer organization. So we do, so I do have to fundraise and I do have to actively fundraise for my organization. So, but yes, it was definitely time to take that step and I don't regret it. It has been one of the best life decisions I've ever made. So, I am now full all in to the movement. And now I'm going to go into how I got involved and why, and why I got involved with the community as well as organizing. So as I stated before, I wasn't formally raised religious, and over the years, I called myself spiritual but not religious, but I always had a disdain. I pretty much had a disdain for Christianity most of my life. Even though I had attended a few church services and I knew a lot of religious people, as in my family included, I always had a problem with the doctrine. I always had a problem with this idea of submitting, just taking things at face value without evidence. You couldn't question it. So, you know, and I've, there's always been examples to provide of the harm that religion does to people. And I also grew up early on, I learned early on in life about how the Black community in particular has been affected by religion and the church. So that always stuck with me. But in 2006, I heard a gentleman that some of you may know named Jeremiah Kamara. And he was on the Michael Bazden show, which airs here in Atlanta. I think it was syndicated worldwide, but not nationwide. So there was an episode of the show called Pimps in the Pulpit. And that struck my ear. You know, we're talking about some of these crazy things that, you know, pastors do. And at the time, he was debuting his book, Holy Lockdown, Does the Black Church Limit Progress? And I was really, really impressed with what he had to say and the breakdown of the psychology and the pathology of religion within the Black community, which after, you know, you kind of laugh at it, you realize that it really isn't a joking matter and it's not funny. Also, but I eventually met him at a book signing for his second book, The New Doubting Thomas, at Greenbrier Mall, which is a predominantly Black mall, predominantly Black area at a Black bookstore. And so that was also, I remember being so excited to get his book and meet him in person and actually talk with other people who shared similar views. I also watched Bill Maher's Religious that same year, which also further incited my, that was also insightful. It was inciting to me. And I just really, really started speaking up more about my dissent with religion. Much to the chagrin of one of my mentors, who, while she was, you know, very, very Afrocentric, and I was raised, you know, with that background, and that education, and I was raised to be a critical thinker. I was raised to, you know, challenge the system, buck the system, you know, all of that. But when I started expressing my views on religion, that was a hard stop for her. She actually tried to discourage me from speaking on that because it was personal to her, which only pissed me off. That only pissed me off even more because I was really disappointed that this woman who helped raise me and who helped raise me with this, you know, with this view and also with this activist mindset and was just really trying to discourage me. And so we had some conversations, and but also there were other people who were telling me, wow, do you not believe this? I don't either. So there were people who were contacting me on the back end, and they were saying, okay, yeah, I get it too. So through Jeremiah's Facebook page, I saw a link to the Black Atheist Facebook group, and I joined. And at that time, I was still sort of, I hadn't, you know, I heard the term atheist before, you know, said it as a teenager, but then backtracked on it. But at that time, you know, I really didn't know that there was at least a contingent of Black atheists in particular, which was very, very important to note, because for one, I was, you know, I, like many other Black atheists, are like, wow, you mean to tell me that there's Black folks who actually don't believe in God? And so I was not only shocked, I was actually happy to see that, because these were, you know, these were people that I could at least converse with, and I'm not hearing any backlash. So I also became familiar with the group's creator. And from there, I started searching for atheist groups in the Atlanta area to meet in person. Because as our family grew down here, for those of you who aren't familiar, I'm married and I have three children. And, you know, my husband and I decided that, you know, we didn't really want to be around church folks. You know, we didn't want our network to be a bunch of people who went to church. So, you know, that was also becoming an issue. Now, while we don't mind, you know, keeping to ourselves, when it came to who our children connected with, we wanted them to, you know, get to know other people, but not that we were going to have people just inviting us. Because much like, you know, everyone else and who lives in the South, we're often asked, what church do we go to? You know, we can never escape that.
Yeah.
So I started searching for atheist groups in the Atlanta area on the tip of a Black atheist meetup that was supposed to take place. But I ended up finding a few groups here in the Atlanta area, which was also a pleasant surprise to see, because I didn't know that there was already communities in place. And that was also my introduction to other prominent Black atheists and other Black, other atheists at the time, you know, atheist speakers. I didn't realize there were conventions taking place. So there was already something here that really, really got me going and really excited me that I wanted to be a part of. And, but during that time, I spoke with a few Black atheist cohorts, and they were telling me about some of the problems and challenges they experienced when attending predominantly white meetups. And so me being green and going in saying, you know what? Okay, hopefully this won't be an issue. We're all atheists. You know, we shouldn't have, you know, we're bonded by, you know, this common thing. It shouldn't be a problem. But lo and behold, when I attended the meetup, one of the first things that was said to me, which was often what many Black atheists hear, is I never met a Black atheist before. And so it became a very tokenizing experience. It also became a patronizing experience, because as me and the only other Black atheist who showed up there, as we started talking, we started getting some feedback, and there was some folks that were getting defensive by the things we were saying about what we experienced. And also, if you remember, at the end of 2010 was when the Eddie Long scandal broke here in Atlanta. So that was also another catalyst. You know, I saw some people who were, you know, they were criticized. He was being criticized. He was being challenged. But as far as letting go of, you know, God, that was something different.
Can you refresh us about what the Eddie Long situation was?
Yeah. So the late Bishop Eddie Long was the former bishop of New Birth Baptist Church in Lithonia, Georgia. It is a very prominent Black neighborhood in DeKalb County, east of Atlanta. This guy actually led a march, or he was very vocal about being anti-LGBTQ, which we found was very much protested by leaders in the Atlanta area. You know, they denounced him for it. And I think he actually marched with, I think it was George W. Bush, you know, against like same-sex marriage and same-gender couples. So at the end of 2015 was when the scandal broke with him that it had been, you know, on the hush-hush for a number of years that he had been carrying on relations with some of the young men in his church. Surprise, surprise. So the very thing that he was denouncing, you know, he was caught doing. And it was later learned that there were some expenditures of the church that were, you know, being lavished on these young men. And he was giving them gifts and such with the church's money. But basically, when he got tired of them, he just discarded them. And of course, with anything, that hurts people. You know, that is psychologically damaging to people. And that is just something you don't do. So that was the scandal that broke with Eddie Long. And so he said that he was going to fight it, but he ended up settling. And he actually passed away, I think, in 2017, ironically, on Dr. King's birthday. That was the scandal that broke at the time. And there was a lot of conversation around that. And Atlanta being a very, predominantly Black area, it is considered a chocolate city. And realizing that after attending that meetup, I said, you know, there has to be more Black folks out here who either A, don't believe in God, or B, are questioning, but they don't think there's a community support for them, and they don't think there are other people who can relate. They don't think that there are other Black folks out here who don't believe. And at that time, even during this time, as we see that we are still working on our diversity and inclusion efforts and our equity efforts, there was we decided that there was a need to start at least a local group in Atlanta, because at that time you had African Americans for Humanism, which was a subsidiary of the Center for Inquiry. There was also Black Atheists of America, which was based out of New York, that were doing YouTube videos. You also had the Black Skeptics Los Angeles, which is headed up by Sakibu Hutchinson. So there were other Black organizations out there, but there was nothing local to Atlanta. So the other Black atheist, name is Ben Burchell. We'll always give credit to him for us starting the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta here. And our focus was always to bring about and foster in-person community, not similar. Ben was a former minister, so he wanted to, you know, his model was a church, mine not so much. So we decided to kind of combine those two and do in-person events with other atheists, primarily Black atheists and religion doubters. So that's what we started doing. And so we started Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta in Atlanta in 2011. And Ben also had a connection to Daryl Wray. And so we immediately, one of our core missions was to establish coalitions and to build with other organizations, especially support organizations, which we knew recovering from religion was. So in addition to creating our meetup group, also creating a closed Facebook group, and also creating a website and starting to have in-person meetings, connecting with folks who we were able to connect with some folks who are in the radio. In establishing that, and also I think off and on we were doing some meetups with recovering from religion. But in May of that year, actually, I'm going to backtrack for a moment, because as we started meeting, and I will tell you, our first meetup that we had, our first meeting, which was at the Little Five Points Community Center in Little Five Points, if you're familiar with the Atlanta area, there were 14 of us there. 14 people for our first meetup.
Wow, which a really good turnout.
Yeah, and those numbers have been consistent throughout the years. But what that showed us was that people were ready for it. That there were people who were looking for this type of group where we could sit and have conversations and people could, you know, similar to what Recovering from Religion does, express their views about religion, the challenges that they have, the different challenges that they have in dealing with family members and friends, and also the trajectory that we deal with in the Black community. So, you know, but also that was the first year that I attended, I attended my first ever American Atheist Convention in 2011. And when I tell you, it was like that when you have that whole eye opening experience, you know, like when you have that, you know, when you think you're seeing like a heaven, if you will. So that, I mean, I already felt good when I went to that meetup because it was great to connect with the other atheists that were there. But to see that many in the same space and to hear the talks, see the people, and to see how friendly everyone was, you know, to really connect with folks on a human level was just absolutely amazing, because that was reaffirming to me to be a part of this community. It was reaffirming to my atheism. And it also let me know for sure that this was where I wanted to be. This was who the people who I really wanted to be around. It was like building and finding a new family for me. Because again, for many of us, I've lost family members and friends along the way, but I've always been of the mindset that you can start over and build anew. And so that was where I also met Daryl for the first time, was at the American Atheist Convention in Des Moines. And part of the reason why we went was to attend the convention, but also to start sharing and promoting the organization. And so from there, I got to know some of the affiliate directors, the state affiliates, directors for American Atheists. And so we started building from there. And so in May, fast forwarding to May of 2011, Ben stepped away from the organization and I assumed the role as president. And so from there, the leadership team convened from there. That's when we started branding. And we continued to host events. We continued to participate in different projects. And as the interest in our organization grew and in starting similar groups, or similar like affiliates, we expanded the scope of our organization nationally and just shortened the name to Black Nonbelievers, as to what you see today. And so from there, there's been just fast forwarding. Whew, it's a lot to, you know, we could be here for probably a few hours talking about all the different things that we've done over the years. But, you know, I definitely want to be conscious of people's time. So in addition to hosting various events, developing working relationships with other organizers, other leaders in the movement, I also started serving on the boards for the other organizations in 2014, and I resumed my role as a group leader with Recovering from Religion and have been hosting, facilitating the group ever since. So that was my introduction to that. And so over the years with Black Nonbelievers and with other organizations, we've participated and facilitated a number of in-person events. And I can say that I have gotten to know some wonderful people along the way. You know, and that is something that I take very seriously. I know there are some other people who are leaders in the movement who, you know, they may not even know your name the next time they see you. And that is something that, again, I hold near and dear, because these connections and these relationships are very important, because as you are building and as you are getting to know people, it is important to know their stories. It is important to know their journeys. And it is important to know how we can help each other through them. And also, so with that, it's important to understand in addition to the overarching problems that we face with religion as far as church state, you know, violations, and how the evangelicals try to, and as they do, infuse their religious beliefs into public policy, which is something that we have to fight and be aware of. Religion also has internal impacts on folks, and more than just religion, indoctrination. And this is going back to what I said about me being raised secular. Even though I wasn't raised in religion or raised in the church, I was in fact indoctrinated. There were some perspectives and worldviews that I had growing up that I had to that I had to overcome. And there were some things in my life that, some personal areas of my life that I've had to overcome and that I've had to get help for. One thing I've noticed and one thing that has been expressed is that, religion tends to foster, even if it isn't the main factor, it tends to be overlying. So religion and indoctrination does impact our worldviews. It does impact how we, how we see and view the world. It also impacts our engagement with other people. And for the most part, if you've grown up in a religious community, for the most part, that's mainly the community you know and the community that you engage with. You often either very seldom or not at all deeply engage with other people. So I'm sorry, I have on my actual, I have on my organizer hat and facilitator hat here. And I'm going to put that down so I can focus on the presentation here. But religion also impacts child rearing. It affects how we raise our children. It also impacts our physical, mental, and emotional health, as well as whether we choose how we deal with it and also how we don't. And here's where I'm going to note Candace Gorham's book, The Ebony Exodus Project, which focuses on Black women leaving religion and also the psychological and mental and physical impacts that it has on, especially on Black women, which it does. So these things that that we deal with when it comes to how we were raised and how we may also subconsciously engage and raise our own children, how we're dealing with future generations, it does impact and it affects our relationships. And as we see for many people who leave religion, that does have an impact. We do have members who are still in interfaith relationships. That has been an issue when it comes to raising their children, when it comes to how they see others or how to engage with others, especially as people are coming out of it. And for some, it can be a very painful process, as many of you may very well know. It can be very painful and also isolating, and it can be confusing. But, and also our self-development. And this goes back to what I said about how we actually deal with our problems because many of us do, or how we don't. Because what is the number one thing you hear in the religious community? Give it to God or pray it away. And so which prevents people from actually seeking those clinical solutions that they may need. And this is where our organizations come in, because many people who leave religion behind, as the doctrine and as the institution often conditions you to think, that you are alone, in your doubts, that there is no one to support you. It's like that abusive partner or even abusive parent who makes you feel that no one else is there for you, which has a systemic effect on a lot of people. And again, I'm not speaking here as a, you know, a licensed psychologist. I may be playing one right now, even though I love that Daryl's here for that. But in my engagement with people and also understanding how that feels, our organizations can really, really help people overcome those feelings of isolation and loneliness, because it can be a lonely and isolating journey for a lot of people. And there may be some folks who, and there are a lot of folks who may not know just exactly where to turn. I understand that not everyone may have the same fortitude that I had to actually go and start seeking these things out. And that comes from dealing with your religion, you know, engaging your religious community. There's a lot that goes on with that. And because it doesn't foster the critical thinking process, there are some people who have to start that as adults. And there's no shame in that. But it's often, you know, it's often noted and it has to be understood. So our organizations can help with overcoming those feelings of isolation and loneliness. They also help with building community and also those connections, because that is something that in rebuilding not just your not just yourself, but also increasing your network, that is what we have to offer. As Todd and Eric stated earlier, there are clinical and medical resources and referrals, such as the Secular Therapy Project. And that is one that I'm glad that, we're able to point people to. We can also help re-educate on worldviews. So if you were, for example, if you were a part of a fundamentally religious community that was extremely anti-LGBTQ, that was extremely patriarchal, and also that might have been extremely racist, because Jeremiah has a good documentary, which is available on Amazon Prime, about the religious roots of racism. That's important for folks to understand as well. So our organizations, because we are evidence-based, and we try to have a verifiable premise, we do encourage people to re-educate themselves, which is also another process. And also it helps with liberating yourself and being in liberation from those dogmatic perspectives. Whereas you may have thought that this was the only way and that's it, you tend to find that once you leave religion and you leave those, you leave that indoctrination or you unlearn it, you find that there are multiple avenues. You find that there are multiple solutions. There's no one right way to do things. And so, and there's a community to help you with that. And finally, it can help you can help become a better you. Because ultimately, even though we have community, there's also an importance. There is also crucial to help improve and rebuild ourselves. Because what do we often, this is another aspect of religion that I've always hated, that you're always supposed to look to this outside entity and to this divine entity to complete yourself, that you are nothing without it. It isn't called self-esteem for nothing. And I contend that religion robs many people of their self-esteem. It is very, very apparent in the way a lot of people engage. So with secular organizations, can help you become a better you. You can realize the power that you have within yourself and that you can do. And it can be scary. It can be scary to realize that there are some things that you are on your own with, that it is up to you, that there is no God that is coming to save you, that it is going to be up to you to do it. But in doing that, you can realize and recognize your power and your agency, and you get it back. So with that, here is what, this is a small view of the secular community. And I need for people who may not know that there are this many organizations on a national level, here are just a few. And of course, Black Nonbelievers is among them. Recovering from Religion is among them. And Gail, Daryl, and myself have the opportunity to connect with many leaders on the national level at least once a year. So, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that once you leave your religious community, even though our community is still considered small, even though I think it's bigger, certainly the number of religious nuns as a voting bloc is increasing. I think we're among the largest. So you begin to find that there's an abundance of resources. There are a number of organizations that you can connect with, because I almost felt overwhelmed by that. I was like, wow, you mean to tell me that these organizations are actually out here and actually doing this work? So I realized that I wasn't stepping into anything new. I wasn't doing anything new or that hadn't been done before by other people. And quite honestly, quite frankly, Black Nonbelievers was only meant to be local to the Atlanta area. You know, there was no envision of it being a national organization, but I do appreciate what we brought to the table and to the community in the years that we've been involved, as well as other organizations that you may see here. Now, you have some folks who ask the question of why are there groups like Black Nonbelievers? You know, I remember the first time someone asked, after we did our first podcast interview, there were some white people who were like, well, this organization is racist. Why is there a group called Black Nonbelievers? You're separating yourselves. We're supposed to be one community, blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all across the spectrum. But of course, when we're dealing with, you know, there are demographics in the United States and across the world who are dealing with not just religious persecution, there's also other forms of systemic persecution and injustice, and which definitely pertains to the Black community. And there is no other group of folks that can help deal with that than, guess what, other Black folks. So, you know, it was definitely, it was an organization that was and still is needed. And as you can see here, you also have, you know, Hispanic American free thinkers, you have ex-Muslims of North America, you have the Secular Student Alliance. And what I contend is that it makes us a stronger community to have specific focuses. It doesn't make, you know, I think when we're able to show the diversity in our, you know, in our communities and within our organizations, that we can tackle other issues that are relevant to our worldview, it strengthens us, and it strengthens us to know that there are people who who specifically focus on it and who have an expertise in this area. Like, for example, even with Recovering from Religion and the difference between American Atheists, for example, Recovering from Religion definitely is a more of a community building and a support organization, which is needed. So that diversity in itself makes it easier to understand why our different organizations exist, even though we all work together.
And even inside our Recovering from Religion, we have different groups. Like in our Helpline community, you know, we have the Black Nonbelievers, and we have the Mormons.
Absolutely.
And the Jehovah's Witnesses. We're
absolutely.
People,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's important for people to know. If you didn't know that these, that these chat lines were available and that were tailored to people who coming from those experiences, now you do know. But and here's where we get to the part where, as much as we are here for you, we do need your support. And I will say this, that. We are, you know, no one here, there are no organizations that are trying to guilt or shame anyone into supporting them, like many have experienced with their religious organizations. They certainly do have the, you know, they certainly do have a head start on foundational support, as well as, you know, religion and the churches, it's perceived that they have the monopoly on fellowship or community, but they don't. I often argue at what cost as well, at what cost to your personal dignity, at what cost to, you know, your personal growth and development. But our organizations, like any organizations, because there are still other institutions, or, you know, there are other churches that, you know, buildings that do need some support, so do we. And all of our organizations are 501c3 organizations. So donations to us are tax deductible. I'll give one example. We have about 4,000 or so people who are subscribed to Black Nonbelievers website. If about at least half of those folks contributed $1 to $5 a month, we would actually have a very sustainable working budget. And that would mean that we could also sustain our affiliate groups, which we do have. Our affiliate groups are listed on our website, but we can also, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do that actually help people. And I'm going to put out a challenge even to those atheists or people who are questioning religion who are closeted. You don't have to be out to support our networks. You don't have to be open, out, and visible, even though we encourage that. We encourage open identification. It isn't required to participate with us. But if you utilize our groups, and which we hope you do, if you utilize our support networks, and especially if you're still involved with your religious communities, helping to support us with a few dollars really, really goes a long way. And also, in addition to, you can do more than one or all three. You can also participate and volunteer. One of the main things that I like to see is when people participate. Even if you never donate a day in your life, which I hope you do, which most people who do participate do contribute in some way. Participating with our organizations makes a difference. I know right now we're in the middle of, you know, we're in the midst of the pandemic. So right now we're not doing in-person events, but as we host virtual meetings, they cost you nothing to attend and participate with. But if you feel comfortable enough to jump in and volunteer, you know, as was said in the beginning, do volunteer with it. You'd be surprised how fast you can get involved in leadership within secular communities. You'd be surprised. And it can feel overwhelming because, you know, we're still so short-staffed, if you will, staff without pay. This is above our pay grade. But, you know, because we are still looking for people to develop. This is a part of developing leadership as well. And I'm proud to have cultivated a number of leaders within Black Nonbelievers. You know, people who go on to, if they go on to do their own projects or whatever it is that is near and dear to them, or whether they start serving with other organizations, it's good to be a part of that leadership pipeline. But guess what? Yes, we are always looking for volunteers and people to help support. And you got to be careful because, yes, some of us will jump on you to say, hey, yeah, we will. Gail's nodding in agreement because, yeah, we will pounce if we can. But I do try to keep in mind that everyone, and you don't have to be out in front. You don't. I will reemphasize that. And if you feel like you can't volunteer or even participate regularly, because yes, we still all have lives. There are still many people who are still working through this pandemic and who are working, you know, still working in general. You can definitely share information. Now, for those of you who weren't aware of BN's existence before, now you do know. And so it may be helpful to folks who, you know, who may not have known our, you know, our organizations existed before. And so it's good to share information about all the organizations that you know. So for those people who weren't aware before, that's one thing I love about whenever I meet someone new, I love telling them there are more of us out here. There are resources here for you. You don't have to go through this alone. You know, we are a community of folks. We there are folks that you can engage, and there are folks that are willing to, you know, or they're standing by and are willing to help. But even with all of that, I must throw this in here because this has been also a part of my experience of being in this movement, is that there are some folks who are so deeply indoctrinated, and they are still so overcome with their religious beliefs that they may be on the help that we may be able to provide. So, as Eric and Ty stated before, there's a clinical piece to this. You know, there's a secular therapy project where people can get help from a therapist, and we encourage that as much as possible, especially for those people who really, really have been emotionally and psychologically harmed by religion and the people that they've engaged. However, we have noticed that there are some folks who aren't looking for support. They're looking for an audience, and they're looking to see how they can not utilize, but use and abuse. There's a difference here. You have many people who come out of religion, and they think that they're the only ones who have been through this so much that there's no one else who can tell it like they can. So, and also, again, they may be beyond the help that we can provide, because most of the help and support that we provide is peer-based. And so, you know, there are some problems that might be beyond my pay grade, so to speak. So, in establishing Black Nonbelievers, as I know with other organizations, especially those that are focused on community building and support, there are guidelines that should be set, guidelines and expectations that should be set and that need to be followed. I think there are some people also who come out of religion who are, you know, it's a very liberating experience. We don't take anything away from that, but there's also a management piece to this that people do need to expect when entering an organization, especially on a support level. So it is good to set guidelines and expectations, and not only do we expect people to follow them, but we're also following them as leaders and organizers. Also, it's okay to be proactive with the vetting process. It's good to be, you know, and I know with recovering from religion, you've had some folks who may answer a questionnaire. They may try to get on a chat line. You don't know if they're trying to infiltrate. You don't know if they're believers that are trying to get and, you know, worm their way into the networks. So it's good to be proactive and sort of look for those things that might set off those red flags. It's okay for us to do that. Also, don't discriminate, you know, but do be discerning. Most of our organizations, as 501c3s, we're open to the general public, but specifically as Black Nonbelievers, we do state what our focus is, and as allies, what your role should be. And also, not even just to the allies, but to potential members and participants, as well as supporters. It is okay to be discerning, and that might, you know, that also goes along with the vetting process. Try to help, but not save. I'm going to say this again about the pay grade. I don't relish in trying to save people. That's what religious folks do. And even I realize that we can't help everybody, especially since we try to encourage people to help themselves. We can try to help people, but trying to save them is ultimately futile, because people have to want to save themselves. It's about, again, helping people to understand the power that they have. And so there is accountability there. When you try to save people, it can imply that it's your responsibility to save them, which isn't true. It's not even my responsibility to save my own children. I guide my children. I don't control them. And so this is also a systemic factor that I think we need to take into consideration and also reconsider when it comes to engagement. And also taking self-care, taking care of yourself, because when I tell you that, you can start to feel burnout very quickly, especially as you become involved in this community. So this is something that I personally have had to not just learn, but also put into practice. Like I will tell you, this year, I refocused on my health. After we finish this presentation today, I will be headed to do my exercises, because I realized that my health was in jeopardy. So I had to take a step back, and it's understandable in engaging with people who are still, trying to find themselves in our communities. It's a lot. But taking care of yourself is important, and also putting yourself first at times is important. You don't have to be, you don't have to be totally self-sacrificing to other people. But if all else fails, and if there are people who will not comply with or adhere to the rules and expectations, you can say bye-bye. There may be other groups, there may be other organizations that may tolerate certain things, or that may not, that are okay with certain people being who they are and not necessarily improving. But if that doesn't work for your organization and it goes against your mission, and people are insistent on going against that, then you can say bye-bye to them, and you don't have to feel guilty about it. Because again, the focus is the people who really, really do need the help and who really are committing to that support aspect. So in conclusion, I'm giving a few definitions of community. A feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals. A similarity or identity. Joint ownership or liability. So I know for people in general, the idea of, again, being responsible and getting involved and realizing that you have a part to play within our organizations can be a bit overwhelming. It was already overwhelming when you left your religious community, or it could have been overwhelming if you were raised non-religious and you really didn't think about engaging a community before. But there is a responsibility that we can have for each other and for ourselves when engaging our community, as well as when we find our support networks. It is important that when you engage and you happen upon a community, not just happen upon, it is important to utilize us for your improvement and for the improvement of your families, for the improvement of our overall communities as well, because many of us may belong to more than one community. So it's definitely a gratifying experience, I will tell you that. I will just tell you for me and how it helped me, and hopefully it will help you if you aren't already involved. And I know a number of people on here who are, and I just appreciate you all. It's a matter of rethinking, re-educating, and empowering ourselves beyond what we've been taught by our parents, because guess what? Sometimes our parents are wrong. Sometimes we as parents are wrong. It's about rethinking all of that. It's about redefining, but also, again, revisiting, and also, and it may be a re-education or even a first education. And also, again, empowering each other and stepping up and taking that responsibility, and also sufficiently utilizing and knowing that our organizations are out here, but also utilizing them to help yourself, and not just for yourself, but this is also to help others. There's no telling how many people we're going to see leave religion and leave the God concept behind in the future. So we're thinking about future generations. We're thinking about people who will be here long after we won't be. And also for people to get involved who may eventually step into our positions, because that's what we want. We want to be able to look down the line and help develop people to get involved so that we can continue to help people foster more healthy relationships with other people and themselves, and also to help build sustainable communities. Let's talk about sustainable and foundational, because that makes a huge difference. And it's not going to be an overnight process. These things start small and they're gradual. You didn't gradually, you know, the indoctrination process was gradual. Overcoming it may be gradual. And also, you know, getting involved may be gradual. There are some people who have been a part of our online networks that I hadn't met until a few years down the line. And that's okay, because that journey it varies with different people. But do know that in your journey and in that process, that you definitely aren't alone, that there are people who are here to walk it with you and to help support you and also help develop you in case you decide you want to step into a leadership position. And this is what we're all here for. And we hope that even if you are dealing with a large number of religious people in your life, that you don't have to feel that you are closed in and bottled in, that there's always people to help support you and engage with, and you can build a new community in that. So thank you very much. That concludes we're moving over to the Q&A portion. I hope I didn't take up too much time. So here is, if you see here, there's going to be a flyer for BN's 10th anniversary celebration, and you may see a few familiar faces there. Also happy to announce that, Phil Session and Will Judy, I hope he's on the line. Happy birthday to you as well, Will. We'll also be participating, and hopefully by that time, we will be able to convene in person again, and we will also be taking the proper safety measures and precautions with whatever we do with in-person engagement in the future. So we hope you consider participating and supporting this event, as well as events with our organization and with Recovering From Religion, and also your other local and national organizations. So with that, I will open it up. I will open the questions.
All right, I'm gonna stop sharing your, all right, great. Mandisa, thank you so much for this this talk here. This was fantastic, and I know that I came out with quite a bit. What I'm going to do is I will post some of the resource links into the chat, and also links to reach out to you as well, and let them, and reach out to Black non-believers as well. While I do that, Todd, you want to ask her some of the questions that we've got? You have to unmute yourself, my friend.
Hey, is this better?
That's so much better.
Yeah, you always tell me I sound better when I'm muted, Eric. So also just so everyone knows that the resources will be shared again in the description of the YouTube videos when they come out. I think they come out on Wednesday. So if you can't, if you missed the links or can't copy them down, you can find them later. So we got one question here asking if there's any other secret sites for Black non-believers other than the RFR, maybe like on the secret Facebook pages or other places that you may be aware of.
So if you type in Black non-believers on Facebook, you will come across our public page. You will also come across our closed group. And we do have a set of questions that that we require people to answer. And if you found it through this chat, through this talk, please let us know so that, we'll know how to, we'll know that you found us through here. As far as I know, we're pretty much the only one. There are a number of groups for people of color on social media, but right now my primary focus is the one I facilitate. So
awesome. That question as well as this one were both asked via email. So folks, for any upcoming discussions, if you have a question before, you can submit to them by email. So I'm going to kind of read this verbatim, Mandisa. This person says, I now consider myself an atheist, but I still go to church. The people at church are really nice and friendly, but they supported me during my divorce and hard times. I was on my way to becoming a priest, but I put a hold on that because my beliefs aren't consistent with the church. I will feel regularly guilty about for leaving and telling them about my beliefs, and I don't want them to think I took advantage of them. I will also miss the community. Do you have any, she was looking for some, or they were looking for some advice, and anything that you could advise her of?
So here's the thing. I realize that not everyone's journey with leaving religion is a painful one. There are a number of non-believers and atheists who are still very close with their religious community. And that is totally understandable. It's totally fine. It can be a gradual process. The one thing I always suggest people keep in mind, though, is that it is about your growth and development. It may make others feel bad, but that shouldn't be a reflection on you, because if they've gotten to know you as a person, hopefully you'll be able to have that conversation with them one day. And it's great. You can always acknowledge the support that they provided. And that's one thing that's good. You don't always have to throw you don't have to throw every experience away. It's totally fine to acknowledge that you had a great support system in your religious community, especially through hard times. That's a part of the human experience, and it's a part of the human condition. It's okay to hold on to that. But also too, if you find that you want to still, be a part of your religious community, but also that you want to, you can do both. You can be a part of a secular organization and at the same time still, engage with your religious community. I mean, there are a lot of people who do it. I couldn't imagine being in that situation. I imagine it has to be tough. I imagine it has to be very, very hard to deal with, because as you come to your realization that you're a non-believer, I imagine that it becomes much, much more difficult to listen to some of the things that you hear religious people say. And sometimes it's hard not to just blurt out something. Sometimes it can be very, very, very difficult not to do that. But one thing that our organizations do, though, is kind of help with that process, because we often engage a lot of people, a lot of former believers who are angry, and they want to lash out, and they want to tell a whole world, about these beliefs. It's almost punching, because I understand what that was like. But what we can help do is kind of help temper that. You know, we can help with how we can help people find, you know, how to formulate their answers. You know, how do you engage religious folks? You know, what type of things did you say when you either came out to your parents or your family members? What was that conversation like? And how can it be an objective conversation as opposed to it being a confrontation? So we also help with that process. You know, there are some folks who, you know, who are more experienced in those areas, so that if you are still involved or engaging with your religious community and you are trying to figure out how to have those conversations, then we can help you do that. That's what a good support system would do. You know, so it's not, you know, and hopefully in the ideal world, religious people wouldn't turn your back on you. They wouldn't turn their backs on us if they realize that we don't believe anymore. And even if you decide not to be a part of that community, then they would still offer their support. It's always good to prepare for the worst, but hope for the best. But in between that time, it is good to engage either your local or national secular support system to kind of, you know, to get help with that.
Nice. Well, thanks. I had someone reach out to me and ask, you know, if I could help them start up a community of folks who had their similar former belief system. And what would be, I know you talked a little bit about it, but do you have any other specific tips or things to avoid when starting up a community center? I know that you said to start small, and I really liked that. Anything to avoid or anything to, any other tips?
Try to avoid duplicating the efforts of what's already out there. Try to avoid starting an entirely new group when you don't have to. It's always good if there is a local organization that you become, that you can become involved with, even if they aren't doing the activities that you may want to do. It's good to at least become involved so that you can at least try to offer suggestions and also help facilitate some events or some things that other people may not have the ability to. Like, for example, with our organization, you know, we do a number of social activities. You know, we go bowling, we went bowling, we went to the movies, you know, we did all sorts of other activities. We also volunteered, but that takes more than one person to do. And so if you find that there is an organization in your area that you can lend a helping hand to or participate with, start there first, and see how you might be able to help there. If you find that isn't working, because that's also a reality, you have some organizational leadership, they refuse to budge on the things they do, and they don't want to do anything new. So, yeah. But it's good at least to, if you are going to start your own, if you are going to start your own organization, yes, definitely do start small, but also build up those relationships. Start connecting with people in the area. Try to find out how you can work with other organizers so that you can build, work, and sustain working relationships.
Awesome.
So I was really impressed that your very first meeting, you had 14 people show up. That was so big, and it had been so encouraging when that happened.
Yes, it was. You know, there are times where I start feeling like, why the hell am I still doing this? You know, there are times where it gets rough. But when you engage, and that's one of the reasons why we've always, why we focused on in-person meetings and meeting people in person. because you really, really get a feel for people and what they go through when you engage them in person. I mean, this is great. This is a great avenue, having the virtual meetings. And I think it's good to see people face-to-face, even virtually, because I think, you know, in the online spaces where you're typing, that kind of gets lost. Those connections and that communication can really, really fall through. But when you are really able to see people and see them in person, it's reaffirming and it's uplifting to know that the right decision was made.
Yeah. Mandisa, thank you so much for joining us today. I said it before, but I can't thank you enough. I feel really, really lucky to have some of your time to speak to our group of people here today.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.